This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. Our mission is to serve you and empower you so you make better financial decisions in your life. Today, we're going to get a little deep and we're going to talk money philosophy. Also, a topic I'd love to talk about is solar. And we get so many questions from people about putting solar on their own roof. I want to tell you what is also going on in the solar space that would be potentially much more cost effective. Things are changing so rapidly in the industry. I want to let you know how to get the greatest savings from your solar if you have some. So, financial philosophy. I talk about our mantra, save more, spend less, avoid getting ripped off. It's like a tree you add ornaments to. But the great folks at Humble Dollar, Jonathan Clements, newsletter about money. He posed a question to people recently. How would you summarize your financial philosophy in one sentence? He got a number of posts, and I want to read them to you because some of them are very much like nuts and bolts, do this, do this, do this. And others are more general, more like our mantra. The one that's been most popular, spend less than you have. Buy generic when possible. And invest the rest in index funds. I like that. That sounds like me, right? Buy generic. How many times do I talk about store brands generics? Spend less than you have. Invest the rest. Another one, this is from Kurt. Lower maintenance is more desirable than better performance via higher complexity. Okay, what does that mean? As people move up the income ladder, they tend to be really attracted to financial promoters that say, I've got this great thing. It's so much better. And because of your wealth, you qualify to be in this exotic investment that's going to have so much greater return possibilities in this private placement. People who do that kind of stuff, who think, hey, I've really made it. Now I'm getting pitched from these things, end up with so much less net money or even lose a lot of their money versus people who keep it simple. This is from John. Financial security first, then wealth building. The whole idea that, you know, the thing with people who have debts and have their lives kind of chaotic financially, take care of the basics and then wealth building. Okay, so my disagreement with this, John, is that one of the things that happens with how people handle money is they never quite ever get around to saving money for the future. So roughly half of us have access to a 401k at work. And I want you from the get-go to be participating in it and building up money in it and grabbing whatever employer match there might be. Or if you don't have an employer account, putting money in a Roth IRA, because I want you to build a lifelong habit of saving and investing. Simply because my experience is when people say they'll get around to it, they just never seem to get around to it.
Yeah, I did that early on, thanks to your advice in my early 20s. I just went all in at 15%, took the hit, or if you're getting a raise or whatever, just like, if you don't see it, then you never miss it.
And so now you work just because you want to, because you could have retired 10, 15 years ago, right?
No, not quite. But I'm, you know, I'm very happy with my retirement savings for sure.
Here's one, I don't know how to pronounce this name. I think Sago. Patience and simplicity are virtues. Patrick, never spend more than you earn. Never end a year with any debt. Sanjeev, spend as little time or money as possible on things that are less meaningful so that I can get more of the things I really care about. Yeah, you know, that goes to the core of how people fritter away money if they actually look at where they're spending dribs and drabs of money. it adds up to real money over a month. They're like, I really did that? That's why one of the greatest things to do, you know, that diet thing that was in like 15 years ago, that if you're having trouble controlling how much you eat, eat in front of a mirror. And all look really gross eating food. And so if you look in a mirror and you see yourself eating, then you lose appetite. Well, the same idea of this is if you look at what you're actually spending your looking at me that's like I'm crazy. Awful.
Yeah, that's terrible.
You don't remember that? That was like a thing.
I'm not shocked by it at all, but yeah.
So it's the same idea with money. If you actually, most of us will ignore looking at our bills, looking at our credit card statement, checking account statement, whatever, because we just don't want to know, because we kind of know there's bad stuff behind the curtain. Look at it, and it will help you get control of that. And I could go on and on because there are so many things in here that are so core kind of things about just making simple changes in your life lead to more freedom in your life financially. And money is not everything. Money, the purpose of money, first of all, it buys you shelter, buys you transportation, buys you food, buys you these things. But money's not the God. The whole idea is as you earn more money, you want to avoid what's known as the marginal propensity to consume, which is magically as Americans, as our income goes up, our spending goes right in tandem, where most people in the rest of the world, as they've met life's basic needs, they save a huge chunk of what's left beyond that. We just don't have that philosophy in America. Having a little bit more of that would buy you a lot less anxiety in your life.
You know how I like to siphon off money for things because that's what works for my brain?
Right.
Your philosophy of if you have a big windfall or whatever, you say you take 10% of it and use it to blow it on something. Well, I like that philosophy for like if there's things that you want to splurge on in your life, have a separate account and automatically put part of your paycheck into that account. And then that's your splurge on the things that you love to splurge on money.
Yeah. And you've always lived by that philosophy. It's worked for you. And that's why there is no one right strategy for everybody. It has to fit your personality, your outlook, the way you process information in order to have more control of your money.
All right, we'll go to questions now. Ron in Georgia says, in Clark's podcast on how to hire a contractor, there's no mention of asking to verify that the contractor carries sufficient liability insurance and has workers' comp insurance. Isn't this important enough to include in this checklist?
Absolutely.
If the contractor you prefer to hire has insufficient liability insurance and or no workers' comp, is it acceptable to ask him to sign a waiver of liability before he does work for you?
It won't be enough. The waiver of liability won't protect you because it goes all the way back to English common law that you're responsible for what happens on your property. So this is an oversight on our part in hiring a contractor, and absolutely we will add it to our checklist. And thank you for being eagle eye like that and being a member of Team Clark.
Richard in North Carolina says, what unlocked Samsung Android smartphone should I purchase if I plan on joining a Telo or consumer cellular phone plan?
So Samsung has a phone series called the A series, and the A series is their discount line of phones with various features or lack of features available on them. I'd start by going to Samsung's website, click on, I don't remember if they call it mobile phones, cell phones, whatever. Click on that. Click on the A series. You'll see all the models. Keep that open in one window on your computer, and then go start with the cheapest one and put in that model number in a separate window, reviews, and read what the tech reviewers are saying about that one. If that one's really crummy, go to the next cheapest A series and see what reviewers are saying and the rest. The other thing, I don't know what your budget is, but I really like, if you're interested in Android, to look at the Pixel 6a. It is one generation back of Google's own phone series, and the A's are the discount version of the 6's. Now they're on the 7A, if I remember right. So the 6A right now in the marketplace tends to be $249 or $299. Again, I don't know if that's in your budget, but it runs pure Android and is a really, really respected phone. 6.1-inch screen, I think, on the 6A.
Would you ever recommend buying a refurbished or used phone?
Depends on how much you use your phone and depend on it. If that phone croaks and you're stranded somewhere, then having that refurb that you save money on isn't such a great deal.
Ken in California says, I have a question I've never heard in my years listening to your podcast. I recently came across a video that was very interesting and made me think of you. The video was about why we should pay by cash for a simple reason. Money loses value if we use it by card. When we pay by card, both the bank and either Visa or MasterCard take a share for themselves. So in effect, a $10 purchase is only really worth roughly $7 to $8 to the merchant. So over time, after the merchant pays his bills and the portion after that pays their bills, the money is only in the hands of the banks or Visa or MasterCard. Should we only pay by cash to help the economy?
That is a great question. We have the highest merchant processing fees in the world, and I've talked about that recently. What it's effectively doing is 3 cents on each dollar. So a dollar nets out to be 97 cents with the typical credit card transaction. And so it is a drag on the economy. You compare it to other countries in the world, it's a crazy amount of money. The credit card processing fees are so large for retailers and restaurants that in many cases, it is their second largest or third largest expense of operating their business. Paying with cash, the funny thing is more and more businesses no longer take cash. I'm seeing that repeatedly where they don't take cash. There are a number of reasons. There are businesses, retail and restaurant businesses, that no longer will accept cash. One of them is external theft. The other potentially is internal theft. And the credit cards eliminate most of that for a retailer or restaurant. But no doubt the fees are astronomical in the United States. And it is highway robbery. It's reverse bank robbery, what's going on in the United States with cards. So as far as the impact paying cash, what I think you're going to see, and we just had this as a number of questions on a podcast just a week ago, is more and more businesses are saying, yeah, we'll take your credit card, but it'll cost you 3% more. Are you okay with that? And for one, I'm okay with that because they are getting clobbered by the Visa MasterCard cartel. Coming up ahead, getting clobbered by your utility bills makes more and more people think about solar, but is really the best answer installing solar on your own roof? I want to give you an alternative.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Baker's, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Baker's worth it every time. Baker's, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I get these questions from people that are so hard to answer about putting solar in at their homes. And they tend to gravitate to ask me these questions because I was a pioneer on putting in solar before it actually made financial sense to put in solar. I was just so into it. And I did my first solar installation. Was it 1999? Maybe it was long ago. And it was just for hot water, and because it made no sense for putting up house solar. And in many places in the country, it absolutely is like a no-brainer. The Southwest, because of the enormous amount of sun, Texas, Florida, it just makes immense sense. And but then there are lots of people who have been very successful with solar in New Jersey. And you don't think of New Jersey as being a sunny climb. But it's all about what it costs you to put those panels on versus how much it reduces your energy bills and what the payback will be the number of years. Well, there is something that is legal in most states, not every state, that it's community solar, where a neighborhood, if you have a mandatory homeowners association or a voluntary homeowners association, the neighborhood puts together a solar co-op. And you can do a small, what's known as microgrid solar, so much cheaper per kilowatt, sharing it among neighbors than what it is to put your own solar on your own roof. It has to be the right kind of feel of a neighborhood where people really are trusting each other, it's well run, that sort of thing. But it is a way to produce solar energy at a potentially much lower cost with a neighborhood solar grid. I once had a house with a lot of land, and instead of putting solar on the roof, I put in a solar farm. So it was on a hillside, and I put in a huge array of solar. Many hours of the day, I produce much more solar than the house could use. It would have been so efficient because right where I had the solar farm, it was adjacent to a neighbor's house. It would have been great if I could have shared that solar array with a neighbor, shared the energy. But in the state where that house was, it's against the law. It's a felony to share power with a neighbor. I mean, obviously that was just to protect a monopoly power company. But in states where this is legal, this is an alternative. With solar, if you are forgetting that, you want to put solar on your own roof, take any claims made by a solar installation company salesperson with a big grain of salt, because they are going to greatly exaggerate potentially the payback cycle, and also the efficiency of the units they're putting in, the panels and all that. And that's why you've got to go third party and look at sites like available from the federal government, where you're able to calculate based on your zip code, your address, what the payback cycle is likely to be for a system of a certain size. But I loved having solar through the years. I love having it now. It saves me so much money. I've had actual real payback, but it took longer than I expected. It was not a short cycle payback, but now it's really paying me back because I've absorbed all the cost and just saved money going forward. Krista? Right.
Chris in Connecticut says, my wife and I are considering purchasing an adjustable bed. There are so many places that sell them, but we were considering trying Costco given their great reputation in case something goes wrong. Would you recommend buying this type of product there or look elsewhere?
100%, because how soon are you able to return that item? Like, what's the deadline for returning that item?
Like, never.
If you get an adjusted bed. Yeah, adjustable bed. There is no limit. So if you have that adjustable bed for 2 years and you hate it, you realize, you know what, why in the world did we buy this thing? You can take it back. It's the assurance. And very rarely will it take somebody 2 years to figure out they don't like something. It'll be a lot quicker. But knowing that Costco's got your back like that makes it a great place to buy something like an adjustable bed.
Margaret in Colorado says, my friend and financial advisor met with me and informed me she and all the other advisors are being mandated to get a fiduciary license.
Hallelujah.
Because of this changeover, they will be going from charging fees to a cost of 1% of my conservative funds. I have three accounts with them, an IRA with a spouse benefit, and that's around $100,000, a Roth IRA, about $100,000, and a transfer on death at $126,000. I read your article on Clark.com titled, Should You Manage Your Own Portfolio? And it indicates that 1% is not outrageous. So do I stay with them or should I switch to one of your three favorites? And if so, which one? I'll be paying double what I was paying, approximately $1,500 in fees versus $3,000 if I'm charged 1%. Please help.
All right. So how is it that you'll end up saving money paying more fees? Because when you're with a full commission stock brokerage, which this one historically has been, and now they're becoming a fiduciary relationship with you, they have historically put you in high-cost funds and high-cost investments because that made them the most money. Now, as a fiduciary relationship, their duty is to put you in things that have extremely low costs. The odds are what you'll save in commissions and ongoing embedded expense ratios in funds will be so much cheaper that you should end up with much more money down the road, even paying higher fees for advice than you were paying prior in what appeared to be direct commissions. Because what you're not seeing is all the embedded expenses in the things you're in. Now, the alternative, if you go to Schwab or a Vanguard, this is one that I'd say those two rather than Fidelity, because of the advice angle you want, you will pay lower fees significantly, and you'll be in a fiduciary relationship. You would be eligible at Vanguard for Vanguard's PAS, Personal Advisory Service, and your fees would be 0.30%. And you'd be getting the advice and guidance and placement and funds. So it would potentially be a much cheaper choice for you. Your accounts are larger than what I would recommend for Schwab's Intelligent Portfolios, but you could look at the other advice offerings from Schwab. I would say in your case, if you're looking at the alternative, it would likely be Vanguard would be the best move for you.
And what is a transfer on death account? Is that like some kind of insurance thing?
No, it's where the money, it's like, let's say you own an account and you decide at time of your death that I'm going to be the beneficiary and it becomes my account.
Right. So it's just like probably just money that has been saved.
I've never heard it referred to as transfer on death. I've always heard of it as beneficiary designation.
Okay. Michelle in Arizona says, last winter, I had to take my daughter to the ER at a hospital in state. We got an explanation of benefits from our insurance pretty fast, but never got a bill from the hospital. I have full legal and physical custody of my daughter and gave the hospital the legal paperwork that night because they are not allowed to call her father, and they did call him at first.
Yeah.
I am wondering if they are sending bills to his house and he is throwing them out and never notified me. He lives in my old house from over 10 years ago. Am I legally obligated to call the hospital and find out what's happening? I gave them all my info the night of the ER visit.
So Michelle, do it. Do it. Call the hospital. You know, odds are I can tell the energy there is not so positive between you and your former husband. So odds are he was doing just what you suspect, that he's throwing the bills away, trying to mess with you, potentially mess with your credit, whatever. So yes, call the hospital, figure out what bill is still outstanding. The bills don't get better with age. It's best to make sure that these are properly processed through insurance sooner rather than later, and that you come to a full accommodation on the bills instead of waiting for some call from a debt collector someday that you're not going to want. Because let me tell you something, if this ex is actually throwing bills away and not communicating with you, but then a collector calls, I can predict that conversation. Oh, I have no legal responsibility for those debts, but I can tell you who does, and this is her phone number.
Yikes.
Don't you think? I mean, that's...
It could happen, yeah.
With that kind of energy going on in this ex-relationship, that's why you want to be proactive and contact the hospital and figure out what is still outstanding beyond whatever insurance would have covered. And I hope that it's exactly as the original EOB said, and there's no shock, bill shock, that you're going to have to be dealing with. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I want you to know, the question you just asked is like the perfect kind of thing that people contact our Team Clark Consumer Action Center for. When you have a very specific thing that you want to make sure you don't get burned by, we provide one-on-one free advice and have been doing so for nearly 31 years. And you can get that free advice from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday, except holidays. And the number you call for free one-on-one advice, 636-49-CLARK. Remember, what are we about? You learning ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.